Hello everyone, welcome to another IT Career Talk with IT professionals, and today we have a Chief Technology Officer. So my guest today is Dondi Imperial. Hello sir.
Hello, hello Rafi, hello to your viewers also.
Right. So Dondi, let's get into it. Can you describe your role for us?
Okay, so I work for Amihan. We at Amihan we try to we cater to, we're a small company that's trying to cater to larger enterprises. So I think it's fairly interesting. My role essentially there is to guide the technology vision and how we use technology to deliver to our customers. So that might mean what technologies we use, our architectural practices, and so on. Yeah, I guess that's basically what it would be.
Right. No? And jumping off from that, as the current CTO, are you still very much involved in coding? And if so, what's your stack? Yeah.
So yeah, I'm one of those guys that I consider myself a software engineer at heart. Mm. So even just today, I was looking at some code that I had to, that I was reviewing, and even as recent as yesterday, I pushed some changes to one of our production systems. Our software stack officially is Golang at the back end. We're kind of transitioning from a monolithic service style back end. We never really did the old style monoliths where everything was rendered on the server side. So we sort of skipped that and went straight to monolith services. These days, we're trying to be better about service-oriented style architectures. I think these days people call these microservices, but the connotation for me of microservices is kind of they're micro. So we have some of those. We have some services that there are maybe 100, very small, yeah, maybe 100, 200 lines. But yeah, we also have services that are sort of between monoliths and so I'd say I think about these as right-sized services. So we're almost exclusively a Golang backend shop. I'll talk about the backend a little bit first.
Sure.
We like PostgreSQL. We have so I'll go from like the basic stuff to the more unique to us, I'd say. So we like PostgreSQL. I can't think of any other RDBMSs that we use today. No, so yeah, we're exclusively Postgres. We run a Kubernetes backend. We use Kubernetes for infrastructure orchestration and stuff like that. What else is there? I'd say cloud agnostic. We have our own cloud management product, which is called CloudBlocks, which we deploy to enterprises for their on-premise cloud stuff. We also deliver to, these days, most people want to work in the cloud, even large enterprises like banks. They're fairly happy and willing to go to the cloud. So we also deploy stuff to AWS, Azure. We also have couple of Google Cloud deployments. So all of that is basically Kubernetes. Whatever Kubernetes engines run on those environments, that's what we use. On the front end, we're almost exclusively an Angular TypeScript, the new Angular shop. And then we also have, which is one of our older products, actually. We have big data stuff. Mm-hmm. And there we run stuff like Spark. We have Cassandra, we have Neo4j, and then we run some machine learning on top of that, and we run like transformation pipelines.
Right
there. So it's a fairly complex stack, but we know what we want, we know what we use, and we don't diverge from that too much.
Right. Before we continue, let's dial a bit back, no, and understand your journey naman. Right, how did you become a CTO? And even before we answer that, no, let's go back to like really like how did you even get into the IT field? No, parang nung high school ka pa lang ba? Parang because right now may mga tracks na, right? Yung wala nang high school nga, they call it tracks, like you can pick STEM, ganyan. At that time wala pa. So how did you decide na magiging IT ka?
Nung college ako, being a software engineer was not really a thing that people used to think about being. So I can remember I was not even one of the most interested people in, like there was this guy in our computer class who knew more about computers and he would show us like command stuff. Today I understand what he did. Parang papatunugin lang yung ano yung speaker ng CPU. But then it was like, whoa, mind-blowing. But none of us could compete with this guy. He was the only person in my entire class who understood that. I thought that, and my family thought that I would be a banker.
Okay.
I have relatives from two generations back who are fairly successful bankers and fairly wealthy. And so this is what I thought I would be. But at the time that I was starting working, there wasn't too many opportunities in banking. And essentially at that time, what it meant to be a bank was you'd start like a teller. That wasn't really something interesting to me. But then again, so I actually started working at a construction company's asset management office because I had no formal programming training. And they had this system that was written in DBase 3 that nobody could understand because the contractors that wrote it had left. And they had this thick manual. This was the time of when people had thick manuals on their tables instead of Googling the internet. So I read the manual and I figured out some of it. Not to this day, I don't know what I did, but I was the only person that was able to make changes to that system eventually. And I thought, yeah, this is interesting. But at that time, this was late 90s. People were, it's funny. This was like pre-Y2K boom where everybody started. And also, I guess this is also pre-web boom. Or at least the early days of web boom. I was not aware that any of that was happening. I just wanted to make a living at the time. And then, I thought, okay, this is interesting. I applied as a job as a programmer for a company that did not know how to hire programmers. So and this is the only reason why they hired me, because they only hired me because I was probably able to do well in the interview, but I had no idea what we were talking about. The person that interviewing me had no idea as well. So neither of us knew anything about programming at point. And they hired me. Lucky enough for me that they had a fairly decent programming team. So I learned from my peers. This was in 2000. So this was now post Y2K and near the tail end of the web, the dot-com boom, right?
Right.
So lucky enough that my entire journey to where I am today has been a lot of serendipitous moments and fortunate turns of events that it just turned out that way. So they're lucky enough. The people weren't hostile to somebody who I'm sure after a few weeks they figured out, oh, this guy doesn't really know how to be a programmer, does he? But they didn't treat me as person that was a burden. Instead, they were supportive and they helped me. After a few months, I was decent. So I was after a few, maybe 3 months, I was a contributing member to that team.
Right.
So I stayed there for a while. The next company I moved to after that, so that company they didn't really they were trying to catch the tail end of the dot-com boom. Mm-hmm. So they were building portals at the time. They wanted to build the next Yahoo. So when they started tailing off projects, there was nothing for me to do there anymore. So I left. I moved to a company that did consulting work for, at that time, it was, they built everything on top of open source technologies. Interestingly enough, that company, I work for the same person that hired me there today. So I'll get to that later. So I worked there. This is where I learned a lot about what being a software engineer is, about quality. The guy, I don't know if he's fairly famous. Winston D'Amarillo. So at the time, he wasn't the Winston D'Amarillo he is today, but he was still Winston D'Amarillo. Like, and every time he'd talk to us, he'd tell us, if programmers and companies in the States can do it, there's no reason that we can't.
Right.
So there you, and that was kind of our culture, that we were strong software engineers. We weren't just coders. We could do what the counterparts in Silicon Valley, or at least that's what we wanted to believe. Of course, you're young and you believe that thing, those things.
No, I think you know, we do have that brain space and mind power, no? Maybe exposure lang, and yun yung kulang.
I agree.
No? Right, but mental capacity, we definitely have that.
So there's this podcast of Reed, the guy from LinkedIn, where he says, the thing about Silicon Valley is that you walk a couple of hundred meters and there's Google, another couple of hundred meters and there's whoever, Oracle, and it's lined, the roads are lined with large companies. So that's the advantage that they have, that there's options everywhere.
Right.
And so if you're in that environment, you're sort of forced to be something that contributes to that environment, something like that. But anyway, I digress. So I stayed there for a while, and then this is that first company is where I essentially learned to be, like I said, to be what a software engineer should be. It sort of, to this day, molded my thinking about open source and quality and testing and just doing stuff well. I work with some of the strongest software engineers I've ever worked with to date there, and I tell people that ask me, how do you get to where your skill level is today? I find somebody and I chase them. Right, so there I worked with one of my tech leads at the time. He was really, really good at stuff. He'd explain stuff to me, and many times I wouldn't understand, but I was chasing this guy. Right, so I wanted to be. One day I wanted to be his level, and even there's, I think something common in IT, in for programmers, is that you're kind of insecure, so you want to be accepted by your peers that you perceive to be, at the level that you want to be. Right, so you sort of, there's sort of that extra motivation to get good because you want them to accept you, and you want to get to that level, right?
And may PR pa, may peer review or yung ano, no? So they also exactly. Check your code. Pero wait, anong you wanna show na maganda din code mo?
There you go. Yeah, and then at that time I was lucky that we worked with a couple of prominent contributors to open source projects. We worked with some MIT guys. So I really learned a lot. That was like my education about being a programmer at that company. I eventually left to look at other opportunities.
Right.
Not too many things interesting at this point. I joined like a company that was very, very into, at the time they were doing an agile transformation. So this is where I learned agile. I don't know if you've heard about them, Sabre Airline Solutions. They were in the middle of their agile transformation at the time. They had a agile coach, and we were really, really into agile, like TDD and refactoring. If it was a Martin Fowler article, you read it, something, stuff like that, right? So I learned about agile and lean and all of these things that today are like sort of the modern way of thinking about software development and delivery in general, right?
Right.
And I also picked up like some cultural hints there in that company. It's where smart people, I recognized smart people forcing their identities onto the culture just because they did well, right? And they'll like, we had like some guys that would say, look at this thing I did. oh, and then people go, yeah, that's cool. So everybody would think about it that way. And then there was sort of this healthy competition where people wanted to show off that they were. And this can only happen in software development, I think. It's a very, very geeky thing that you brag about some code that you wrote, right? Or some design pattern that you applied well. I don't know if we were all doing it properly at the time, but we were all like trying to be proud of our stuff. And everybody was sort of pushing the like culture of quality, I'd say. After that, I went through a phase of early stage startups. I'd say I went through maybe 7 years straight of early stage startup. Oh, I worked for a, I segued into a online gambling company.
Oh, okay. That should be interesting.
It was actually, I tell my wife that working in an online gambling company is like working for a syndicate. In many ways, right? Many ways. There's like the parties that they throw.
Oh, okay.
So we spent 12 million pesos on a Christmas party.
Wow.
That's the kind of money these people have. For political reasons, 1 year we lost all of our equipment. What the company did was they made us stop working for 2 months paid while they tried to deal with the legal issues and all of these. 2 months paid, and when we came back, they just bought new everything. New chairs, new hardware, new everything. Like that, nothing.
Yeah,
so in this company, every problem is solved by throwing money at it. Just throw money. Yeah.
You have a problem? There you go.
Exactly. So, for example, we looked at New Relic. At the time, I don't know what New Relic costs these days, but at the time it was $50 per CPU. And we ran like a large data center of many, many men. So we had, the company has a large suite of gambling products. So maybe there's, at any time, there's maybe a 50 to 100 services running. So if you run New Relic, you pay per CPU, right? So we told them, well, let's look at this thing because it'll help us with monitoring on in production, right?
Right.
And then the guy, project manager I was working with, said in an email, brace yourselves because this is going to be expensive. It's $50 per CPU. And then in 20 minutes, the email came back. Okay, nothing, like nothing. So that was pretty different from after that I moved to a startup.
Right.
One of the guys I worked with actually at the gambling company pulled me into the company that he started. They needed some tech leadership and they sort of, I don't know, they identified me as somebody who could do that, I guess. At this time, I was already doing software architecture. But everywhere I go, no matter what role, so far, I've always written a little bit of code. I don't believe that a tech leader should stop writing code because you stop understanding what everybody's doing.
Right.
That's
right.
How I feel. Right. But anyway, so after that, I went into startups, small, like early stage startups. Like, I don't know if you've been to any of these companies where you don't know where your salaries are going to come from the next day. You don't know if there's still going to be a company. So I actually went through three successive phases where I was out of a job because the company shut down. So I had this, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, napaka-tibay ng loob mo, no? Just after the first one, okay, try again. And then third one.
But startups are fun because...
Yes, it is.
Your contributions are huge, right?
That's true.
Every day, there's a problem that needs to get solved. And sometimes it's you that needs to solve it. And many times, these things make a large impact of what the company can be, right? And also in startups you're like I don't really like to use the term families, but I guess at startups you're sort of like that because every day you feel the pressure about maybe we won't have jobs tomorrow, and what you do almost directly impacts my livelihood.
Yeah.
So yes, startups are fun, also very high pressure. I've seen our management team who, you could see it on their faces when they were running out, when they were not being successful at finding the next round of funding. You could see that our CEO and whoever wasn't shaving anymore. You could see that they were less They, of course, they had, you have to put a picture of energy and positivity when you talk to your team, but you could see that people was taking a toll on people, right? And then after that, I joined. So that was a local startup, and then I joined like a Singaporean startup. So at, I left the local startup. It was Zipmatch. I left there. I was head of tech there. I left. I joined another startup, a Singaporean. Ah no, this was an Australian startup in edutech. Same thing. We thought we were doing well, and then the money suddenly stopped. And then they called us into a room and then said, "Sorry guys, there's no more company. We'll pay you. We'll pay you the rest. So we'll pay you now and close, shut down the company before we have to shut down the company and give you nothing. So we appreciate that." And then the CEO of that company asked me to join the next company, which is a startup. So this was like 2.5 years each. So people ask me about, why did you keep moving? It wasn't my intention. I wanted to find the company where I could stay, but they kept shutting down. So so I have to warn everybody that wants to employ me that I might be like some sort of pariah in their company. But maybe after 3 successive, maybe, so I'm at the 4th, and when we're at Amihan, we're not really an early stage startup.
Right, of course, I'll say Amihan.
So at Amihan, so now this, now going back, so my history with the people that run this company goes back to 2003. They were the first real software development company I joined. And then one day, so the startup, I was, you know, when you're in a smaller company, you get the feeling, it's a small company. So you and I was, again, head of tech there. So you understand that things aren't going well. So I wanted to stay, of course, because you want to see these things through and you want eventually to have like a successful thing on your record, right? But then, like Winston D'Amarillo, he sent me a message randomly out of nowhere on Facebook and said, "Hey, are you doing anything on, I don't know if it was like Wednesday night or whatever. I want to show you something." And I said, "That this should be interesting." And I had no idea what we were going to talk about. When I got there, there were drinks on the bar. There were a few people there from different sectors. There was people from Microsoft, a couple of other veteran tech people were also in the room. And we were just catching up, talking about tech. They were talking about the companies that they wanted to build. And at the end, so I got, we had like a couple of bottles of whiskey. At the end, Winston goes to the president of the company and says, "Find this guy something to do," and they both knew me. So he said, Winston said, "Are you interested?" Sure, it sounds like interesting. And I said, "Okay, find Tondi something to do." And then I didn't really expect that to be where we're going, but sure. And then a couple of weeks, not even weeks, like a few days later, they sent me like a formal offer, and completely not what I was expecting. And I said, "Okay, yeah, I'll join." So there, I joined as a solutions architect. So after being head of tech of 3 failed startups, I was tired. I wanted to just deal with tech for a while.
Right.
And so when I joined, one of the first meetings with our leaders, he told me, "Okay, Winston's going to name a CTO this week." And then I said, in my mind, I said, "Oh, I hope it's not me." And then it wasn't me, it was somebody else. And then I went, "Yeah, okay. Oh, thank God, I don't want to be CTO." And then fast forward a few years later, our CTO gets an offer he can't refuse. Like, nobody would turn this offer down.
Wow.
So we were all happy for him.
What kind of offer is that? An offer you cannot turn down?
I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about it, but it's something I don't think either you or I would. The way it was characterized is that, not by the person himself, not by our CTO, but by somebody from the team, said that even if you ask me and I'll tell you, no, you have to take that because the opportunities like this don't come don't come to everybody, so you have to take it.
Yeah, I'll try to find that guy, but I can interview him, no?
I'll ask him if he wants to talk to you. He's way more entertaining than I am, but yeah. And then I was at that time. They asked me to be director of engineering, which I accepted because you don't really say no, right? When people ask you these things, typically. And then I had no idea at all. I was just trying. To this day, I'm still trying to like make a contribution day to day, right? Like to help the company do well. And then, so the guy, he was my boss, so I worked directly with the CTO, and then he told me I'm leaving. Oh, okay. I'm not happy about it because I like the guy. I told one of my coworkers that it's rare that you find CTOs that you like to work with, and I really like working with this guy. So I was sad about it, but then I didn't even know that the reason why he was leaving until we talked about it, and he said, oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense. And then later, our CEO, he said, I need to talk to you, but you probably already know that. And then he said, and I had no idea. And I said, okay, here's our new org structure. And then in one box, it said CTO, Don B. Oh.
May pangalan na, nakasulat na.
Okay. Oh, but of course, he was asking me
first. Of course,
Then he said, will you think about it? And it's terrifying, right, to be a CTO of a fairly mature company. And like I said, we deal with enterprises, so right. Some in a way startups are easier because you're only judging yourself, you're only judged by your own standards, right? But when you deal with enterprises, then they have this whole different playbook and they have this whole different thinking. So I was terrified. I said, I'm excited and terrified, right? But you don't turn down opportunities like this because they're interesting and they're what make you grow, right?
Right, right.
So there, fast forward 20 years and I'm CTO of Amiga.
Yeah, congrats on that journey. You know, very interesting. Thank you. As CTO naman, how has your siguro management style changed? No? How do you describe your management style?
So I'm a big believer in the book people wear. A lot of my thinking about how people should be managed, how you should work with teams, comes from people wear. Like my thinking about always about working with people who work with me is that they should be motivated to work, to do, because we work in a creative field, right? So you can't really tell people like, do this, do that, do this, do that. You have to motivate them. You have to bring the best out of them. And I feel that the only way to do that is to make them motivated, self-motivated, and you have to treat people with respect. Now, as far as being a CTO, the main difference, and I'm still trying to learn this and still like internalizing what it really means, the main difference is that you don't just deal with tech.
Right,
even when I was head of technology for some of the companies that I worked for, it was mostly about tech, like this tech problem, that tech problem, this tech problem, that tech problem, right? And then in some ways, that's after a while, you know how to do that, right? Like if you don't know something, then you just learn it.
Right, and right? If you also know where to find, potentially where to find it, no?
Yeah, or you ask somebody, right? My approach is also that you approach these things with humility, right? Because even the youngest, least experienced tech worker might have something for you that you had not even considered before. And I've seen this happen quite a lot.
True, that's really true.
But when you're a CTO, then just jumping back to that, you have to sort of think a little differently about, you're less about tactics and solving a tech problem and sort of thinking about making improvements that will probably not pan out right now, but they'll help the company like 6 months down the road. Right, right. Big picture thinking, right? The nice thing about, and I think many of us that get into programming and software development, the thing about that is that you get like instant gratification many times, like you're working on a problem and then yeah, finally it works.
Yes, it compiles right. Correctly, you know, you see the output immediately.
And at that moment, you feel like a superhero, right? Like I could have done that, right? It's not true. But at that moment, you feel like, yeah, I did that, right? When you leave that space, and you have to, I guess, when you become like a higher level manager, you don't really look for those. Your job is essentially to get people to places where they can have those, I think.
True.
Right. Yeah, so there.
Right.
I still work with people differently. I don't like people calling me sir. Right? Like I'll call you, oh, no, don't, just don't. You don't, it's fine. There's this article somewhere about a Korean Airlines flight where they had mechanical problems and the second officer, out of his respect for the chief officer, could not tell him properly because he was sort of like overruled, and the plane went down.
Wow!
This article's claims said that this would not happen in a Western culture because there isn't that kind of like putting the bosses on a pedestal.
Yeah, seniority, I don't like super seniority. I mean, I think Korean, ganun, they have that level na parang yung ano, parang op, and that's why they have those terms like mga opa, mga senpai, right? They really value that, no?
Yeah, I think as Filipinos, we're getting better. It's probably the American influence, and also probably at this point, decades of working with Western companies that come in and then build their companies here. But we're getting a lot better at that. But still, there's still some, hey, right. sir. You ask sir first, which I think is many times counterproductive, right? Like I tell people, you don't need to call me sir. I know I'm older than you, right?
right. Very interesting. But you mentioned what you want to try to do in your management style is have people parang self-motivated, no? How are you able to do that now? And it's remote working. How do you feel about that? Or what are your ways for remote working?
So it's a lot. We're finding this one of the challenges, actually, that when with remote work, you sort of fall into a groove of just doing projects.
Right.
Doing projects. So now we're trying some things internally, like encouraging our people to build the culture themselves, right? Like peer recognition over management recognition, things like that. We try to keep engaging, so I think something that's healthy is regular conversations with the people that work directly for you. It's still difficult. It's a challenge. We're learning. We're still learning how to do it. I wouldn't say we're good at it yet. We're trying. It's one of the things that we definitely need to get better at, and we are looking to get better.
Just a couple more questions left now before we end. Siguro, I want to understand how you define success. As a CTO, we're supposed to bring success to the company, to our people, and of course, let's not forget ourselves, no? So how do you define success, especially on for yourself, no? Since our audience are looking at, you know, they want to be successful also.
So there's a couple of layers to that for me, right? One of the, of all the things, I've been in software development for 21 years now, of all the things that make me proud is when somebody that I work with and they become like CEO, CTO, or they become like head of tech, or you see them like, this isn't the person that was working me, or no, not that, but this person has improved, he's hit his potential. That's one thing. And when they cite you as a mentor, that's the big thing. Like I'll say, oh, I didn't even think that I had that big of an influence on this person, but apparently sometimes they think so. So that's one thing, like making an impact on other people's lives and their professions is probably the thing that I'm most proud of over the past 20 years. The other thing I'd say it successful is that you do not look at it at a big, on a big picture scale every day, because things do not happen that quickly, right? Like, the way I look at success is very, very micro. Am I better today than yesterday? Right? Like, even these days, like, do I understand my role as a CTO more right now than I did yesterday?
And
I was asked very recently, how do you do that with all of these meetings that you're in? You just take 15 minutes out of every day. You improve that much over like a decade, over 5 years. That'll add up, right? I was somebody that couldn't even write code. I didn't even understand what HTML was at the time. I got hired purely out of luck. I think if you look at, for me at least, if you look at success too much, yeah, like what is success? And you look at where do I want to go to? It becomes difficult to quantify in your mind, because I was going to be a banker. But then the way I got to where I am, for better or for worse, is that, yeah, just making small improvements every day. And to this day, it's all about, yeah, it's all about make that mindset for me.
Right.
But then again, the most successful thing about me is that the people I work with and have become successful and have become like stronger engineers, and they'll cite me as, oh, I one of the most largest compliments I've heard was from a person that was from another team at the company I worked for, and he said, "Mahal na mahal ka ng team mo." And, oh, wow, you know, you hear this and then you almost cry, right? there you go. I hope that answered that.
Right. Yeah, it did. No. It also reminds me of that term, yung Kaizen. I think that's
continuous improvement.
Continuous improvement.
Yeah.
So as we wrap up, no, what's the advice that you would give to our audience, naman? In summary, no.
So your audience is mostly younger people, I guess, no? Right? Like the YouTube generation. There's one thing, and I already touched on that. It's continuous improvement, right? Like try to be a little better every day. Spend some time of your day to get better. It could be at anything, right? Something that's interesting for you. You're lucky if you can find things that are interesting to you that relate to our profession. Like, for example, sometimes I'll go on Coursera and study a cryptography course or whatever, right? Because it's interesting. Like, I don't understand that thing, but it's really cool, right? That's the one thing. Like, just take some time and work on yourself, right? The other thing, I guess, is that... Oh, I forgot what I lost that thing. But the other thing I'd say is that also do... my uncle, when we were young, you know, when you're young, people my age, I don't know about kids these days, but when I was young, I was from the generation that did chores at home.
Right. It's still there, no man. There's still chores.
So my uncle, he'd catch me doing something, and then he'd say in Tagalog, "Ginagawa mo na, hindi mo pa ayusin." So to this day, I carry that with me. You're doing something, try to do it well. You're already doing it, right? It's just a little smaller bit of effort to do it well. That's the best advice I can give.
I like that. It really resonates with me now. No, parang ginagawa mo na nga. So might as well. Parang you're already 90%. You're already doing it, di ba? Make it 100% or even 110.
It's maliit lang yung difference between doing something well and doing something just for doing the sake of doing it. And doing it well will be more satisfying, right, for you in the end.
Correct. You did mention a little bit about cryptology and things on the side. No? Is this is that your current passion, and or what other things are you passionate about?
So I like tech stuff, right? Like, so every time there's like a trend, I'll be a little late. Like, I didn't buy Bitcoin at the time and people got rich from it. But I heard about it. But I heard about it. And then from that, instead of, like, most people would study how to do trading and this and that and this. So I tried to study, understand blockchain and what do you call it, zero knowledge proofs from that. So that's part of just being curious. So I'm generally curious. I also have hobbies, but so I play guitar, like I think most people my age, and I play chess. So recently, when I was younger, that same uncle that told me to do things well, he taught me to play chess at like six years old, and then I used to play it a lot. I was a tournament player when I was like 12. And then when I got into programming, I figured that I had to put all of my energies into learning to be a software, so I stopped. So these days, when I'm a little, there's a little more time for me to do these things, and I think I know a little more than about programming. So I've gotten back to playing in chess tournaments.
Right.
I haven't won any yet. I win some games. They say about chess is that if you learn young, at a young age, then your chances of being a little better as an adult are better than learning at an adult age. So I'm okay. I don't think I'll be champion in any of the tournaments that I'll play soon, but I play to have fun.
Right. I also like chess in Blitz. That's what I really like.
Oh,
Blitz.
Yeah.
The clock.
Yeah. I've lost some money playing Blitz. I like Bullet these days in chess.com. You play there?
No.
1 minute games, these are crazy. Like, you play 1 minute games, you have no time to think, it's all instinct.
Right. There's time to think naman, no? You actually think on your opponent's turn sometimes, no? Some blitz, yeah. Right? There's really a lot of application of things that you know and experience sa blitz.
Yeah.
Right. So, thank you again for the great discussion, no? I hope you enjoyed it. And to our audience, of course, if you have any feedback, any comments, or whatever that you just want to reach out to me, if you're watching on YouTube, you can just leave it in the comment section. If you're listening on podcast or in Apple, I'm not sure how actually, but you can always message me as well. I'm fairly visible naman in the community. So feel free to reach out to me.
Yeah. We're always hiring, by the way, so I don't know if you have but if it's okay, then if your viewers want to reach you, so they can just go to agsx.net and look at our openings. We're always looking for smart people that want to do challenging work, and our work is challenging, many times demanding and all of that.
Right, guys. So if you are open to work, please approach, no?
Yeah. Just go to agsx.net and you'll see our careers page there.
Right, right. I'll put the link below, guys.
Thank you.
Look at the description. You can see the link there as well. Right, thank you. Dondi, do you have any other last shout-outs?
Thank you for inviting me, Rafi. Like I told you at the start, I've never done anything like this. It was fun. It was exactly what I expected. I appreciate what you're doing for young kids to listen to like these inspiring stories and so that they can see a glimpse of what it is to work in IT, I guess.
Correct.
And I hope I wish you a lot of success. Thank you very much for having me.
All right, thank you. So guys, that's it. And if you like our content, don't forget to hit that like button, subscribe button, and notification bell.